Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Joining me for our latest Burr News podcast is PRP MP Walton Brown, who was described not that long ago as a rebel MP. Are you a rebel MP, Mr. Brown?
Not at all.
Why do you think you got that moniker?
I have no idea. I'm a member of Parliament who campaigns vigorously for issues that I believe in. All of my action is guided by principles that I've held for the last 30, 35 years. And what some may see as rebellious in nature is really just an ongoing quest to create a more just Bermuda.
Well, I want to come back to that. I started that deliberately. There is a question later on that I want to come back to that refers to that label. First of all, I do not want to sound in any way unsympathetic to what is happening to Mark Bean, but I do have to ask you. It could be to some people that the PRP might appear to be a bit rudderless at the moment. You have a leader, but the leader at the moment is not being heard because of his health issues. What is happening in that respect? Is there still going to be a leadership challenge?
Right, the PRP have a very clearly defined structure of governance. It has a process in place for when the duly elected leader is not able to perform his or her duties. And so we currently have Mr. David Burt as the acting leader, and MP Burt is carrying out his role as acting leader very effectively. The party is not rudderless, as you suggest.
Fair enough. I'll take that back. I was looking in the eyes of some people, the perception that might be given. There were rumblings only a matter of 3 or 4 months ago that there would be a leadership challenge. Is that still going to happen? Is that still on the cards?
Well, you've heard rumblings of a leadership challenge. All I can say is that we have an acting leader in place who is leading the party well. And clearly you've heard nothing of any leadership rumblings of late.
No.
So what took place in the past is in the past, and we need to focus on what needs to be done today.
The polls have you pretty much neck and neck with the OBA. Is the lack of a visible leader affecting you?
First of all, the polls that you refer to are unreliable.
Right.
And I don't give credence to the results, and I've been making a point for well over 2 years now about the lack of credibility in those polls for a number of reasons, including methodology. And people keep bending about those results. All I will say is that when you rely on an unreliable poll, you're going to get unexpected results in the real world when decisions are made.
So, in your opinion, is the PLP further ahead or further behind the OBA?
In my view, the Progressive Labour Party is in a very strong position to take government. The people have recognised that those who place trust in the OBA have found that that trust has not been honoured or respected. And I think there is a justifiable renewed interest in support for the Progressive Labour Party, in part because of the policies advanced and promoted and implemented by the OBA, and in part because of the vigorous way in which the PLP has challenged a number of the key proposals brought forward by the OBA.
I'll come back to my original question, a rebel MP, and this partly comes down, I think, to your removal from the Boundaries Commission. Then somebody labelled you as having an outside status. What was the reason for your removal from the Boundaries Commission by Mr. Bean?
Right. Well, as you know, Jeremy, all appointments to the Boundaries Commission from the opposition are made by the leader. And so it is up for the leader to explain why I was removed and not me. Everyone serves...
Because that's my point. We can't ask the leader at the moment, unfortunately.
Well, is it appropriate to ask me because I wasn't given a reason?
I can ask your opinion.
Yeah, and I don't know.
You weren't given a reason?
No.
Isn't that strange?
It's not the most appropriate way to conduct oneself.
Would you like to be given a reason?
In an ideal world, it would have been appropriate, yeah.
But it doesn't have to be an ideal world. It just seems to be a statement of fact that it'd be good to get a reason. The fact that you haven't been given a reason leaves you a little bit in limbo, doesn't it?
Leaves me in limbo? Not in any way. I am an elected member of party for the Progressive Labour Party. I serve constituency 17. I serve them to the best of my ability, and I fully expect to serve them after the next election.
But you don't know why you were removed from the Boundaries Commission. That leaves a question mark.
It leaves a question mark in the minds of those who pose questions. For me, I've moved on.
You didn't pose a question?
Politics is full of rapid change and unexpected change. You've got to be an adult in the world of politics to move on.
I agree.
For me, that's not an issue.
But politics is a long time.
I put much time in reflecting on. Well, there are many more important issues other than my particular involvement on a Boundaries Commission.
Well, there are, yes, there are, but it is an important issue because for some reason, unexplained reason to you, the leader of the party removed you from there without an explanation. So it is important to know why that was, because otherwise it could indicate that you were a rebel, that you weren't towing the party line, or it could indicate a rift in the PLP. So it is important to delve down and get an explanation for that.
Well, just to follow the logic of the question, if I was deemed a rebel, I would not have been put on the Boundaries Commission in the first place. My politics have been fairly consistent over the last 35 years. And so I don't accept that there is something profoundly untoward. Obviously, there have been developments within the PLP, and people get moved about. People get put into shadow ministries and get removed. People get put into cabinets again and get removed. That's the nature of politics.
Oh, I understand.
There are far more significant issues that need to be addressed rather than Walter Brown serving on a Boundaries Commission.
I'll come back again to the rebel opposition, the rebel MP at the time. Yourself and Wayne Ferbert, who was, I believe, also removed from the Boundaries Commission, were described as rebel opposition MPs. And I wondered if, you probably won't, I'm not sure how or if you'll answer this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Does that mean your replacements, Michael Scott and Jamal Sibbons, were loyal or are loyal?
You're asking me about the political proclivities of other people. It's not for me to answer.
You have an opinion, though.
Opinion is not fact. Opinions are opinions. I thought you'd be wanting to have a fact-based discussion.
I think opinions are always just as important as fact, especially if they come from a politician.
Sure, they are important, but they're important when dealing with issues of great gravity. For some reason, you're preoccupied with the Boundaries Commission as if it is a centerpiece of political discourse.
It is a line of questioning. I'm not preoccupied with it. But as I said before, there's never been a satisfactory explanation even to yourself as to why you were removed. Mm. And I thought hopefully I'm able to clear that up. Just moving on, because I think we've dealt with that subject as far as we can. Mm. The poll I mentioned today does show that there's 26% of the electorate that are undecided. Is that normal, in your opinion, to have that many? Again, I know you'll disagree with the way the poll, but it does seem, regardless of your opinion of the polling system, it does seem to be a very, very significant number, which would suggest to a lot of people that there's dissatisfaction with both parties.
Well, as someone who's been doing polls for the last 25 years, you will always see a high degree of expressed uncertainty when the election is far away. As the election gets closer, you will see a significant drop in the undecideds. And people will express their support for one or the other party. And I've seen that trend at every election since 1998. It's a wide percentage who have no view or who express an undecided view. And then as the election is called and gets closer, people decide. And so you'll see it down to about 3 or 4% just before the election day.
Okay.
That's just a normal trend.
Fair enough. Just moving on, I did an interview with Sean Crockwell recently for Burnie News, and he revealed then that he had talked to members of the PLP about forming a coalition government. Were you involved in those talks? Were you aware of those talks at all?
Well, if there were any talks that were held, those talks would have been held on a very confidential nature. So even if I was a part of it, I would retain confidentiality.
Well, it's out in the public domain now, so it's being commented on ad nauseam.
Like I say, my politics and my approach to politics is based on certain principles. If you're going to have confidentiality, you have confidentiality. If you're not going to have confidentiality, that's the way you operate. That's not my view.
Fair enough. But just moving on from that then, just talking the general principle about coalition governments, is it time, in your opinion, to look at something like that or to have some sort of parliamentary reform, perhaps looking at proportional representation?
You know, that's an ongoing discussion about the suitability of our electoral system. First of all, a coalition government is not a matter that has much credence in Bermuda given our current political alignment, because we only have two political parties. Yeah. Coalitions are when you have multiple parties holding power. And so you wouldn't really talk about a coalition government, because there's no way the OBA and the PLP are going to form a coalition.
Well, the OBA did, of course, offer the PLP a seat in cabinet.
Right, but that's not coalition. That's a different type of structure. Now, for those who want to look at proportional representation, it is something we can consider. It is not inherently better than the first-past-the-post system. Proportional representation, if we had it today, it would lead to challenges of governability, because you would have the OBA and the PLP with essentially the same number of seats, because they got a 3% difference in the vote. So you would have effectively 18-18. Who would govern? Who would pick the cabinet? And so we need to be careful about what we're asking for. We do have challenges with our existing system. It's very divisive. There's a lot of political posturing, which leads to politically inspired policy rather than policy that truly benefits the country and the people. So we need to find a way to get around it. Just changing the system to proportional representation is not going to do it. And so we need to think about ways in which we can provide for more effective governance. I would accept that.
You would? What would your preference be?
My preference would be to have a system where, first of all, you got rid of the Senate, or you make it elected.
Right.
You cannot have an unelected body frustrating the will of the people. So you reform the Senate, or you get rid of it. Secondly, we need to have more effectively working parliamentary committees, so that when laws are being proposed, you have a lot of the preliminary work being done in a non-partisan, if I can say that, in a non-partisan way, where the details are really examined. We don't do enough of that. We have to be able to present it to Parliament, no matter who's in power, get debated in 2 weeks and passed. That's not a very effective way for determining legislation for a country. So we could have a much more collaborative approach to issues by using committees. We don't use our parliamentarians enough. There's a lot of work that could be done by parliamentarians.
I know in the UK there's an awful lot of parliamentary committees. Why aren't there more here, do you think, or why aren't they more effective?
Because the political system has been structured in such a way that we are so inherently divisive that whoever gets power says, we have it all, and therefore we'll act. The problem is that when you act in a unilateral way, you're going to get equally unilateral responses from your opposition. And this applies across the board, no matter which party is in power. And so we need collaboration, we need to be able to work together, and we need to be able to put Bermuda and Bermudians first in this discussion. And we're not doing that.
I think in theory, nobody disagrees with you. In practice, nobody wants to give up that kind of power, though, do they?
Exactly. So we need to come to a position as a country. The public don't demand enough of their politicians. That's the first challenge. We don't demand enough of our
people. Why is that?
Because we're passive. We love to criticize, but doing the work is a much more compelling exercise.
Indeed. Have people got faith in their MPs? That's the other issue, perhaps.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I've never posed that question. It'd be interesting to do that in the survey about confidence levels that people have in their MPs. I don't know. I can't answer that question. I suspect it's not as high as MPs think it is. So we need to do a better job, collectively.
Well, I wonder if that'll ever happen. It will be interesting to see. One of the biggest news events this year, you were at the very heart of it, really, and that was the pathway to status issue. It's going to be difficult, but if you could take your PLP hat off and just sit there as a political analyst, and how damaging was that to the OBA?
It was very damaging, because for 3 years, I and others had very patiently encouraged, asked or requested for them to collaborate on this issue, because it is an inherently divisive issue. And we argue that a unilateral approach is inherently problematic. So let's sit down and work out something that represents an appropriate compromise. For 3 years, the government refused to do so. And so when they decided to propose and then table such a provocative piece of legislation, I knew I was going to act. I wrote to my leader and said, I will act on this no matter what the PLP says, because I feel very strongly about it. I said, I might embarrass the party by some of my actions, but I'm prepared to take that hit because I feel very strongly about this issue. And so I brought together a group of like-minded individuals, and we launched a campaign to stop this bill.
You actually called for direct action.
And civil disobedience, yes.
Was that irresponsible for an elected official to do that?
It would have been irresponsible for any elected official to sit by and watch one of the most damaging pieces of legislation in our history to be passed.
Civil disobedience.
Exactly. Without apology, without remorse. Civil disobedience is a legitimate form of protest in a democracy. It's been used all around the world to create and achieve political objectives.
And will be.
And will continue to be. I don't know why people had such a challenge with it.
Put like that, they probably shouldn't have. Perhaps it was who called for it.
A sitting member of parliament.
Yeah.
Why? If you can embrace Dr. Martin Luther King calling for civil disobedience to achieve an important objective, what difference does it make if an elected member of parliament is doing it? That legislation was offensive. It was profoundly problematic. And if we hadn't done that, that bill would have been tabled, debated, and passed. What was the alternative? That was the only option. We didn't want to resort to violence, so the option was to engage in civil disobedience, to wake people up, to mobilize people, and get them to withdraw that bill.
We did see two very clear sides of the coin, didn't we, during the pathway to status issue, with the representations of black and white or the various protests or whatever. Did it damage race relations?
It did, because the Immigration Reform Action Group, IREG, which coordinated the entirety of the movement, we had a completely non-racial approach in our actions. We had mostly black and some white members in our organization. Nothing in our strategy, in our approach, represented racial divisiveness. Mm-hmm. But we knew we were going to get criticized by some, and we knew that some of the criticism was going to be racially inspired. We knew that some of the people who came to support our objective would use racial rhetoric, because Bermuda is contoured by issues of race. Race is the prism through which things are refracted. So it is an inevitable part of political discourse. When we become a more mature society, when we address our issues of racism and discrimination, then race wouldn't rear its head on every major issue. But that is the unfortunate reality of Bermuda today.
The damage to race relations that was caused then by Pathway to Status, has that gone away? Has it been mended? Or is it still bubbling under?
Oh, I think it still bubbles under. I think there is a group of people who feel that they have certain entitlements, and some of that is racially polarizing. There are those who equally feel that no one has entitlements, and that too is racially polarizing. So we remain fragmented along those lines. Effective leadership will find ways to mend the fences and to ameliorate the racial condition that permeates our society today.
You're on the committee looking at immigration reform. How far forward have you gone with your work?
Well, all of our work is in the public domain, so I have no problem speaking about that. We have proposed policy regarding status and Bermuda, our children who are adopted, foreign-born children adopted by at least one Bermudian parent. And we are now looking at the issue of mixed status families, i.e. a family in which one person might have status, someone PRC, and someone else nothing. So we're looking at that, and we've just begun our deliberations on that issue.
So just for the listeners of Bernese, can you just explain when you think you'll be in a position to make recommendations to government, and a kind of roughly a timeline that you think you're working to on that?
Right. We have already made the recommendation regarding adoption.
Yeah.
And we expect legislation to come about imminently. By the time this broadcast is aired, it may well have been tabled in Parliament. And so since we've just started on the issue of mixed status families, we're not in a position to give a date because we need to first get our do our research and collect information on it. Then we'll consult with tactical people. We'll consult with people who have vested interests and talk to them. And then we will set a time frame. But we are doing a very careful assessment. It's a very critical issue. And we're not going to rush it. We're going to get it right.
That's good to hear, obviously. The reason I said that is because, is there a risk that as you make recommendations and as this reaches the legislative timeline, the demonstrations could start again?
The only way demonstrations could possibly start again on this issue is if the government decides to ignore the work of the working group and just table legislation on its own. I have every confidence that the government will not do so. We had a very long process to get where we are today, and I doubt the government will act in a way that will frustrate the work of the working group.
And spark more protests.
Exactly.
Changing tack completely, there has been a very big vote in the UK about Brexit. It's going to be, I guess, quite some time for the full implications of them, but do you think there will be any implications Bermuda from that?
No, without question.
What do you think
if Britain, if the British citizens decide to leave the European Union, and if they do, it's going to take 10 years to negotiate, to renegotiate all the treaties and everything, but if they do, that will mean the access that Bermuda has to live and work in the wider European Union will come to an end.
Mm.
It will not eliminate our Schengen access, because that was lobbied, as you know, I lobbied for that, and that was done irrespective of our connection with the UK. That was done based on Bermuda's and the other overseas territories, their understanding. But the most important implication will be the inability of overseas territory citizens to be able to live and work in the European Union. There are a multitude of trade and business implications, and the business community will be better able to assess those.
Sure. Yeah, I was looking at it from your point of view. Yeah. You're an advocate of independence.
Always have been.
Always will be. Do you think this will help your cause?
At this point, I'm grasping at straws. There is no seeming will on the part of the Bermuda electorate to contemplate the issue of our sovereignty, even though, as we speak, Britain continues to devolve power back to the UK. This particular governor is grabbing more and more power, and nobody seems to care. And we seem overly complacent. That's why we can't change our political system. You know, we're not a democracy. We think we're a democracy. We're not a democracy because we have an elected parliament, but that parliament has no effective control over our police, over our regiment, over all of our external affairs. And people in 21st century Bermuda think that's entirely acceptable.
What you allege that the governor's grabbing more power. Can you expand on that?
I'm not alleging. I'm making a statement of fact. This governor has been interventionist insofar as he has taken the step to grant a multitude of people naturalization, first of all, which has led them to apply for and get Bermuda status as first step. Secondly, he is the decision maker on whether or not we're able to enter into agreements with a number of countries regarding the child maintenance payments. We just had that discussed last week in Parliament. So there are issues that involve matters outside of the constitutional powers of the governor. Maintenance payments, for example, just one example, in which the governor is now involving himself
he has no constitutional power to do so. The UK have taken back our ability to produce and print our own passports. They've trotted out this vacuous argument about security of passports and biometric components to the passport. But the British plan is to get control of the passports, and then at some point in the not-too-distant future, they will eliminate the overseas territories passports to say that all overseas territory citizens now only have a British passport, because they have a political objective they are trying to achieve to the United Nations. I've been involved with the United Nations since 1990. I know exactly what the UK are trying to do. But we in the overseas territories are seemingly oblivious because we don't see it in our everyday experience.
What are they trying to do?
Oh, the UK want... they're very offended that the United Nations Decolonization Committee have oversight of what the UK do in its overseas territories. Mm-hmm. Every year, the UK are required to make a submission to this committee about how they've conducted themselves in the territories. They're offended by it. They have tried to get Bermuda and the other overseas territories delisted. I was part of a group that fought successfully not to have us delisted. And so what the UK are trying to do now is to show to the UN and maybe to the world that all of these colonies have accepted their colonial status. There's no such thing as the overseas territories passports anymore. They can all live and work in the UK, so there is no difference. Therefore, they are effectively British citizens. So there's no need for oversight. They've already made a decision about self-determination to take them off the list, so the UN will no longer provide oversight. That's the British plan.
You said that the governor was acting beyond his constitutional powers. Why is that? Why do you think he's doing that? I don't suppose he'd accept that he is.
He wouldn't accept that he is, no. Him and I have had that debate in the past. I believe he is, he believes he's not. Doesn't matter what I believe, it doesn't matter what he believes. It's a question of what the people are prepared to do about this circumstance. If people accept it, they accept it, and seemingly they do.
On that note, Mr. Brown, thank you very much for the interview.
Oh, that's it.
Thank you for tuning in to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.